So judgment is a mental process. Judgment is the identification with the ego, it's separateness. And we recognize that judgment is just a judgment I'm creating for about myself. It's not about the other. It's if I'm judging that, then it's something in myself that I'm finding fault with. It's very interesting.
Electric Soil Podcast. Imagination is the electric soil of creation.
Movement, exercise, or you know, being out in nature, meditation has always taken a front seat to the other stuff because it's just how I want to live. I don't want to. I care less about achieving. Well, I definitely care about achieving, but I care less about redlining and achieving, being burnt out and achieving versus just enjoying life and achieving.
Yes. That is exactly, that's where you kind of got to find, that's the sweet spot. The way I've, the programs I've run in my life have definitely been chasing goals, you know, worrying or forecasting the future, trying to control the future and manipulate my time in such a way, you know what I mean? And then when I do get to the goal, it's like a very temporary point of relief where I'm like, and then I'm like, okay, then my brain's like, okay, well, what's next then? Because what's the next goal? As opposed to just enjoying the lead up to that. And then when you do hit that, it's like almost a byproduct. You're like, okay, cool. Like it did work out. Right. So it's a shift for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah. I like how you explain that. That's super cool.
The discipline. So integrating discipline and integrating new habits is like, that works. It just works. It's how it's like a law of nature. So if you put time and energy and effort towards something and power and like, yes, power through, if there's those moments of power through on your, whatever the things are that you want to create habit around, to create, more of a stable practice, the things you're doing consistently, that happens. If when we're able to muster the discipline to do that, it happens. And so it's such a beautiful yin and yang experience of when do I keep pressing, when do I let go? And from my experience in terms of practices, it doesn't, like writing content can be a practice,
right?
So it's like if I can create the space for that in a consistent way, that's like, it's similar time. And I do it consistently, like daily, and just show up for it. Then a lot of content gets created. Now, the other side of that is, like you just said, is like, I can do that. And then I can realize that, oh, I'm not really enjoying my life. It just becomes a tick box thing. And there's also like I really believe there's a cosmic balance that like there's a toll. And I know the people that have pushed themselves the hardest and achieved great, great things, they often exact some kind of toll. Like it's very interesting and it can be on their health. And of course they'll be really well equipped to navigate that, but I always find it interesting, like what's the difference between a balanced life and one life that's like hit like extreme and then burnout and then recover. So it's interesting.
It is, yeah, exactly. It is interesting to think like, so which is, and you know, and is it dependent on the person?
Yeah,
personality, right?
Personality is a big part of it.
Sure. So I guess, you know what, like having said that, it comes down to what kind of life do you want to lead? And for me, I want to leave I picture myself or envision myself as living a balanced life, you know, one that includes, you know, I'm always envious of people that are like into martial arts because they're just so calm. They have that confidence, the confidence in the sense that not so much bravado confidence, but the confidence that like, no matter what happens, I can handle this, right? Physically, mentally. I've always wanted to be somewhat, you know, I've been envious of people that are in that mindset. I'm like, that's where I want to be when I'm X amount of, you know, that's how I thought I would be. What, you know, by the time I'm 40, I'll be like that. I'll zen out and balance, right? Whereas the patterns I've ran have been very much what you're the alternate, right? Where it's just like push, 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 burn out, relax, reflect, push, 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 push. So on one hand, my vision for myself is very removed from my actual process. So at that point, I really have to, this is where I'm getting hung up, I guess, is yeah. Is that.
Marry the process. Mark England would say it.
Marry the process.
Get married to the process.
Cool. I like that.
The process will deliver the outcomes. Just forget about the outcomes. I mean, have an idea of what the outcomes are and what you're aiming towards, but then just get into the mundane and how can you make the mundane extraordinary? And that's the self-knowing part of it. That's the, even like the tantric yoga, it's like when I show up to do this thing and I feel like stress, resistance, anxiety, or whatever, it's like that's the moment to be exploring that. So you get to connect your spiritual practice,
yes,
with your work, with what you're manifesting in life.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's really good advice. Awesome.
You chose this, you know, to some degree subconsciously because of who you're becoming in order to manifest what your next, you know, life is.
Yes.
So it's yes. Who you become, right? It's like that's the choice, not the thing.
Yeah, no, you're right. I always like the quote. There's something along the effect of like, you want to become the person that attracts what you're looking for as opposed to the person that, you know, works towards that, if that makes sense. Like the result is the byproduct of the person you've become rather than, you know, your personality is dependent on what you've achieved. Right. So that's kind of the,
exactly.
Right. So I just, yeah. So yeah. So, yeah.
The attention goes to just keep putting the attention to where am I becoming? What am I becoming? How is this helping me in my becoming?
Yes. Yes, exactly. No, that's good. Easy to overlook.
Easy to say, hard to do.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. And you know what it is? It's breaking, just breaking old patterns and confronting them. And like you say, the only way to break these things is to put awareness on them. So that's a great, you know, what we're talking about today, as far as like the, you know, getting into meditation. So excellent, you know, pivot point to start talking about that. But before we get into that, Jeff, I want to just do a quick recap of our, you know, what's led to part 7 of our 8-part mini series. We're coming around the bend and there are a couple episodes left. So today we are going to be doing it on meditation essentials and things of that nature with Jeff here. But to go back to part 1, where this all started, was sort of an origin story with Jeff and kind of what led him to where he is today. We got into the benefits of yoga, the different types of yoga for episode number 2. And from there, we decided we were going to go much further with it. I think by episode 3, we just sort of committed that we were going to be doing this 8-part mini series, which is rad. And that's when we got into the chakras, the 7 chakras and the energy centers that we have in our body and you know, how to, you know, effectively, you know, place some energy in there to do some healing work, as well as, you know, what they do for us and where they show up in our bodies and such. We also got into, for part 4, yin and yang, the dualities of life and, you know, the contrasting, you know, forces that show up in everyday life. We also got into the Bhagavad Gita, which is like a sacred, you know, text with tons of life lessons. It's a big part of yoga and like Eastern culture and all that. So we got into that, which was a fantastic episode. And then part 6 was breath, which was, you know, I thought, you know, it just seems so simple, but that's what it's supposed to be. And it was great. And Jeff, you gave a great breakdown of just the mechanics of breath, as well as the importance of spirituality behind it as well. And just so the life force that is breath. And now what better way to go from breath into meditation? So very much applying your breath and breathing and getting into a much more silent state. And let's just get right into meditation, Jeff. You know, for some folks that, myself included, it's always been something that has been on my radar, is something that I want to prioritize more. But, you know, from our earlier conversation, as you can tell, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of tasks, a lot of, you know, like we've talked about the checking off, the to-do lists and so forth. And, you know, sitting alone with myself, with my eyes closed, generally is something that gets pushed off the list or minimized, you know, 5 minutes in the morning or 10 minutes when I'm, you know, I view when I'm in the shower, I'm generally in a meditative state, or that 10 minutes before I go to bed after I've read a little bit. It gets very much marginalized, you know, into a much smaller component than I know for a fact it should be. It should be, I take out this, you know, we don't like using the word should, but that it could be, that it can be. So yeah, Jeff, what can we just get into meditation, like your origins with meditation? When did it really start clicking for you? And what can you tell? So the second part, what can you tell folks like myself, even that are just having issues, you know, bringing it into their everyday life?
Dude, great to hear the recap and just really experience the journey that we have been on so far.
Absolutely. Like,
I bet we're going to have 10 hours of content by the time we wrap up show 8. Yep. And how cool is that? Like, how cool. And it's been a pleasure to share. And what I really love to do is to at my best, distill these practices and lifestyles and philosophies into something that's really accessible. And meditation is, it's the most transformational gift I've ever given myself.
Mm.
And I'll say, to be even more nuanced in this conversation, the practice of meditation versus meditation itself. And that's something I imagine I mentioned when we were going over the 8 limbs of yoga. Meditation is in fact one of these, in the Sanskrit term, dharana, is the single pointed, where the focus, where the line starts to blur between ego and oneness. So between the sense of I and separateness versus oneness. And so that's a very lofty goal, to be honest, to get to a state of meditation, but we can certainly practice meditation and get tastes of that. And my friend, it's after years of practice and being a teacher and having seen the transformation in myself and many others that have gone through meditation practice, that have taken it seriously and really embodied it and brought it into their lifestyle, it's one of my greatest desires to be able to just harness that feeling that I can tap into, that sense, and be like, here, this is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about. Because we can talk about it all day, and at the same time, it's still like that intellectual exercise. We've got to be able to enjoy the fruit of our practice for ourselves by doing the practice.
Mm.
And so it is like that we were talking before the show got started, is incorporating new things in the life. It can be challenging because we're used to and programmed ourselves to live a certain way. And so bringing something in, it requires work, effort, discipline, uncomfortable, like whatever wants to come up in that process. And to remember, this is the special part. It's like, it's valuable that stuff come up, that uncomfortable resistance, whatever it is. It's so, we want that. We want that because it means we're in a place of growing. So it starts with a pain point. Almost always it starts with a pain point. And when I started my meditation journey, I was living in the UK. I was living in London, and I was doing a postgraduate degree at a university. And this is right when I had quit my engineering career. And I decided I was going to move to London. I wanted to be around an amazing fitness and wellness scene. And London certainly had it. And I had nothing else. And so I'm going through my program because it was what gave me a visa. Mm. And I'm also slightly more interested in the content. Like, it was biomechanics versus mechanical and material science engineering. So I got to keep all my left brain mechanics, physics, sciencey stuff. In fact, I was great at that. And everybody else there was really good at the human side, the understanding the physiology and anatomy and everything like that. So I got to dive into the stuff that I really liked in that program. And while I'm in London, starting to, you know, put a lot of time into this and also finding myself in love with the yoga scene that I had discovered, and I talked more about that previously, I find myself burning the candle at both ends. And also I've come to the place in my life where I have a demand of a certain level of fitness and a certain manner of physicality, physique, body image, as well. So I had lost a lot of weight and I got attached. I'll be honest with you. I got attached to having abs. I wanted abs. and I wanted to be able to run 10 miles. I was doing it, but I wanted all of that in my life. And it's amazing to, you know, to reflect in the cycles of life. It's like we can get ourselves in shape to run a marathon, but always being in shape to run a marathon isn't necessarily sustainable. So at some point, what I recognized is I got attached to a certain physique, a certain level of fitness, a certain level of output. And here I am going to the yoga classes regularly, around the conversation of meditation, being around the conversation of what is it like, what is yoga bigger than just that 60 minutes or 90 minutes that you spend in a studio. And we've talked about that. It can become everything. It can become a way of life. And so I was curious, and I also was finding my own point of suffering that wrapped into this body image and fitness was also my relationship with food. And I was totally a hamster on a wheel because I would overeat, I would get anxious, I would overeat, I wouldn't be able to cope with my emotions in my default setting, which was all the way back from when I was incredibly obese, hovering around 300 pounds, I would default to eating food as a comfort, as a way of numbing out. And while I had made a ton of progress in my journey, I lost weight, lost over 100 pounds at this point, much better integrating exercise and healthier food into my life, I still had a very dysfunctional relationship with food, in such that I had to, if things got too intense for me emotionally, I would result to eating food, peanut butter, granola, cereal, whatever, were my go-tos that I couldn't stop snacking on. So this is a pain point for me because it was something that I was becoming more and more cognizant, more and more aware of as I was doing the yoga and the yoga practice and meditation at the yoga studio. I start to become more present to my behavior and start to really feel those emotions are starting to come through, whether I'm binge eating or not. And it was wildly uncomfortable. And it would be like, you know, here I am caught in this negative feedback loop of overeat, over-exercise again and again and again, and becoming aware of it. Like when I'm doing it now I'm present to it, and it just amplifies, it puts a light on that void that's really trying to be filled. And I'm trying to do it in a way, I'm trying to find something outside of me to solve that problem. That's what food becomes. That's what drugs become. That's what alcohol becomes, sex, whatever. It's like that's something that's outside of me to try and satisfy this thing that's happening inside me that is feels insatiable. So as that's turning up, I find myself in the consistent pattern of burning the candle at both ends. And that looked like binge eating late at night, and then deciding that I'm going to wake up the next day and run 10 miles. Mm. And of course, if you've ever had a nice binge, whatever it is, the next day, there's a hangover. It doesn't matter if it's food or alcohol, there's going to be a hangover. And of course, that I feel like shit in the morning and I don't feel like running. So I press snooze 30 times. And then, well, that's an exaggeration. I'll press snooze like 6 times and then only have like 10 minutes to wake up, and then I'll have to go straight to class, and here we go back on the hamster wheel. And it was just got to the point where I was like, man, I really need to do something about this. And coinciding with this was my deepening the contribution and deepening how much I'm showing up at the yoga studio, whether it was behind the desk. I started working there. I started working at the cafe so I could get free yoga. And I started this 40-day group that we did every start of the year as a 40-day lifestyle program to bring in the practices of yoga, meditation, healthy diet into the life. And that stuff is, it's so transformational. And here's why 40 days matters, because 40 days in Ayurveda and the science of yoga, the way that the ancients knew how the mind works, is 40 days is enough time to create wet cement in terms of new behavioral patterns and awareness. And then 21 days is really enough to do that. 40 days and beyond is enough to start drying that cement so that we really can make a significant shift in how we're living. So we're it's the reprogramming process and how our neurochemistry and neural pathways, we have the science to back that up. But it's the same thing they understood and knew for thousands of years, that if you're doing this and you've gotten it deeply into your subconscious and unconscious, then it's going to take this much of a different thing that to start to override that, to where your body starts to wake up for that and crave that and know that it's an easy go-to. So in that process of 40 days is resistance. It's all resistance. It's the recoding, the reprogramming process is just the part of the self, the ego, the identity that identifies with that way of being, that is, it has to die because it's being replaced. And so that can be an uncomfortable process. But thank you for that, because that makes it so much more glorious when we are able to manufacture the willpower and the discipline to make it happen. So here's my daily life. It's binge eating, waking up basically 15 minutes before I need to be in the classroom, just enough time to brush my teeth and get out of the door. All right, that puts me in a stressed out state, right? That's just no fun at all. And this is all coinciding with the elevated awareness, like more presence to my madness that I'm experiencing. And I'm like, okay, all right, something needs to change. What is this meditation thing? And let me tell you, it started with the very decisive, it was decision. Decision means to kill, to let something else die. It's basically, I'm doing this and I'm burning the bridge, is a real decision. It's like, there's no going back. As opposed to choice, which keeps everything open and possible. And that's really nice too, in each moment, to have a choice. But when you decide something, it's like, this isn't serving me and I'm doing something about it. And that's that. And what a profound tool to leverage. And it's usually because of pain that we leverage enough of our energy to make a decision. Usually a pain. It doesn't have to be pain, but usually, and you guys can understand that I was feeling that discomfort in the way my life was going. So I committed, I was in the 40-day group, we had a meeting, and I was telling them, and this is a powerful thing to share. I'd say in my experience, 90% of people have some kind of dysfunctional relationship with food. Hmm. And I keep looking to people that are just easeful around food. They're not always craving food. They don't have to finish everything on the table, or they're not starving themselves. So it's a very important thing to touch on, that so 80 to 90%, I say with little hesitation, that many people are having that some kind of dysfunctional relationship with food, because we're not used to having a food abundance in the world. We're not used to, humans aren't used to caring, biologically caring that we are thin or that we have this certain physique. We just used to live, and that's how our bodies were, and eat when we could. So this is all new forces coming in that we're having to integrate. And so I started talking with the group about this, and you know, I said, I really want to create a morning routine, a morning practice. And for me, it was all about creating that space so I wouldn't be rushed and hurried and frustrated because I pressed snooze 5 times and then I gave up my morning exercise or my morning space. And so I was like, all right, here, for 40 days or 30 days or however much, I'm going to wake up at least an hour and a half before I need to get ready to go. And please just take a moment to appreciate with me the fact that that was super duper clear. That is super clear. And when we are charting a new course for new behavior, that sense of clarity of this is what I'm going to do for this time frame, or that's, or X time frame. And specifically what I'm going to do is I'm going to wake up an hour and a half before I need to get ready. So I put that extra anchor of like, I don't even want to think about getting ready. I want to have space to get ready as well. So I gave myself that time. And part of what I filled with that was starting a daily meditation practice. And believe me, sitting still for 5 minutes, as a person who's on that hamster wheel, totally on a hamster wheel, sitting still and being with myself, that's what meditation practice is. It's sitting still and being with oneself. And then the mind, automatically, we start to have attention more towards what's happening in the mind. And we get very much into our head. At least that's my experience. Mm-hmm. And so the 5 minute situation is super intense, starting meditation and sitting still. And am I, all the questions, am I doing this right? Why am I doing this? What's the benefit? I'm really painting a picture here for all our friends who are new to meditation practice. This is all I've heard it. I've experienced it. I've heard it from students of mine. That's part of the, it's part of the journey that most of us experience is like, am I doing this right? What am I supposed to be doing? I thought that the thoughts were going to go away. Mm-hmm. And all of these, you know, it's like the, even the mental consideration of, am I doing this right? Is a profligation of more thoughts. And so it's what we're really doing. And I want to get back into my process too, because I think that's important. But what we're really doing with meditation is being, is getting ourselves into the seat of the observer instead of identifying with that mind. So we can start to see the landscape and the nature of our mind with a sense of detachment rather than being wrapped up and wrangled into the thoughts and the, I've got to do this and this isn't good enough. And I was supposed to do this today and blah, 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 all the negative self-talk. We can get into a seat of the observer and start to see that. And here's what's really special about that is the moment we step out of that, we cease giving it our energy and our power. And if you've ever heard the age old proverb statement, what you resist persists. So when we are all up in our head and we are fighting it and we're thinking that we're supposed to be meditating, we're creating all this extra resistance and it's just adding into the drama. So I think that's why I would say 95% of people that go, that have an intention to start meditating, fall off the wagon in their meditation because of things like that, because it's really about getting into that seat of being an observer rather than being wrapped up in it. And it takes time and it takes practice and it takes even knowing what the hell that is, because that's in of itself an experience to be an observer, to say, oh, that's a thought. I didn't create that. I don't have to take responsibility for that thought. It's just the thought, right? And let it go. And again and again and again. And that's totally a process that we're not used to, especially in Western culture, especially when we're far more head and mind oriented than we are heart and body oriented. And meditation practice is about about bringing the two back together, because we can be so in our head that we forget that we have a body attached to it. And all the information that our body is desperately trying to say, hey, you can stop eating. We're full now. It's okay to not run this morning. You know, all this information, we just bypass it. So that's one of the tremendous benefits of connecting the two together. So back to the process is I committed that process. And by the way, for you listening, this is an important thing. When we're going on to a journey of self-betterment, one of the most powerful things we can do is get really clear, write it down and say it out loud. And even more powerful, say it out loud to a group of people. Mm. Sometimes I make goals and I succeed and I keep it to myself. And there's a place for that. But the things that have been the most emotionally charged and most like, oh, I really, really want to change and create this change in my life, it has been better to say that out loud to people and to have that social support, social accountability. And that it's a way of creating leverage, like a way of exacting a better way of moving the energy required in order to make it happen. So I did it. I mean, I did it, and I'm really grateful I did it, because that kickstarted my whole meditation journey. And I got up an hour and a half every morning before I needed to get ready. I started practicing meditation 5-10 minutes. I moved, I got my exercise in, whether it was running, walking, yoga, journaling, huge part of it for me. Journaling is another way to get thoughts out and to become less invested in them. So those were the practices I leaned onto, and creating the morning routine was essential for that. And I know you've got a morning routine. I know several of us have a default morning routine, whether it's rushing out or having some time to work out and everything. But when we talk about meditation and incorporating meditation practice, something that is essential for the morning routine is to slow down. It's to slow it down. So it becomes less about packing as much into that hour and a half, to just slowing down and having less things and creating more space and doing things with more intention. And boy, is that so difficult for a busy, busy mind. And so that's part of the retraining. The busy mind will resist that. It will resist that. And so that's part of it's just part of it. And that's where we get to learn the art of compassion, is just say, yeah, mind, I know you're losing your shit, but we're trying this thing. Okay. So just let's see what happens. Let's see what happens. And the really interesting thing about meditation is it's like, it really is, it's an experience to behold those different states of being. I've said it before on the show that before I got to yoga, if you'd asked me what is healing, I would say you get a bruise or a cut and it goes away. That's healing. It was yoga and meditation that started to open me up, connect, bring my head back into my body and connect the two, that, oh my gosh, there's energetic, emotional healing. Like, there's undercurrents and motivations for my behavior that I don't understand. And I need to be able to, because I don't understand it, I must, if I want to do something different. In order to get something different, we have to do something different. I must be willing to do something different, and I must be willing to trust and be in the unknown. And that's a big part of what the meditation practice is, sitting there. It's like, I don't know what's going to come through my head or what's going to happen in this, but I'm going to sit here and I'm going to observe. So starting meditation, and really the essentials is to create that space and to know that it's perfectly valid to have no idea what you're doing, to question it ad nauseum until you're frustrated, and then keep going and keep practicing. And what I mean by keep going, keep practicing, it is to simply set the timer for 10 minutes, sit down, close eyes, and do whatever practice, whether it's a guided meditation. Guided meditations are gold, especially when starting, because it's somebody else. It's like we were talking about, that it's really difficult to go from having a 9-to-5 job and then to all of a sudden decide, okay, I want to be an entrepreneur and manage all of my time. It's like, what the hell do I do with all of that time, and how do I do it, use it well? It's the same thing with guided meditation. The guiding is an awesome support structure for how to direct our attention. Because left to our own devices, our attention wanders everywhere, because that's the habit pattern of the mind. And so the benefit of having guided meditation is having that voice to say, okay, come back to your breath, or okay, here's this visualization, or okay, here's this mantra. And then to give space for the practice. And then naturally our mind is going to wander and then come back to the practice. So that's the value of having a guided meditation. And I used guided meditation for a year and a half. I used Headspace. It was a nice app. And that was a big motivation and inspiration for me to create my own meditation program eventually. Because I believe that one of the big factors in the download is to do it with time and repetition and consistency. and then we get the download. So I bet I've mentioned this before, but like this word, the download, that means I'm giving, I'm getting, and I'm receiving the more substantial benefits or experiences from this practice. And I must, in order to receive that, be willing to give any practice a fair trial. I must be willing to give it its due diligence instead of making assumptions and coming to conclusions after the first 5 days or 2 days or 10 days. What is it? What would it be like if I sat and meditated and I started from 5 minutes and I got up to 25 or 30 minutes over the course of 6 months? The answer is no one knows what that looks like for themselves. Like I can tell you about my story. And I can tell you about the theory and the philosophy and the reason meditation works and everything. Really, it's up to you in order to create that and experience that and be like so curious about what's possible. Because my friends, like what I started to notice was out of my world. It was and is beyond what I could comprehend before I started meditating, because it wasn't yet an experience that I had tasted. So I didn't know. It's like, here's this fruit that you've never tried. And we're going to try our best to assume or to go off all the other fruit we've had of what that fruit will taste like. And we don't know what it tastes like till we try it. And so that's another thing about this practice is it must be given fair trial and the adequate space and structure in our life to allow that blossoming. And it's such a beautiful metaphor for nature. It's like we need to give the correct weather for the seeds to bloom and blossom. So one of the things I started noticing is I went through my monkey mind and resisted meditating and still kept doing it as I got better at it. My body went through a physiological change of being more comfortable being seated. So initially being seated would be sore. My back would be sore. My legs would be sore. And of course, there's plenty that we can do in order to facilitate being more comfortable. But eventually the body just gets more comfortable because we're training that. And my legs don't fall asleep anymore because I've trained, because the circulation in my legs now knows that, well, we're going to be seated. So let me make the situation that energy can still flow to my legs. I started to become an observer and I started to realize just what that meant. And there's moments in meditation when we close our eyes and recognize, oh, snap, I was totally lost in that story, that thought process. I was all up in that. And I realized it. And that's the that's like the best part. It's like I realized that I was all caught up in that story, in that imagination, whether it was in the future or in the past or, you know, focused on what I'm supposed to do today. It's like that moment I realize I'm all caught up in that. And it's like, whoa, okay, where else can I put my attention? And then I do that and I put my attention on the breath or the visualization or the body scan, whatever it is. But it's that really exciting moment that's like, whoa, I was sucked in. And then here I am out of it. Okay. So that's a hello present moment. For the first time. I mean, we talk about presence. We talk about being present. It didn't mean anything to me. Just like body, mind, healing, present moment awareness did not mean something to me until I experienced, whoa, I'm not present. Holy smokes. I just walked from my flat to the yoga studio and for not one second was I out of my head. I was all up in that. And so it's like, whoa, we start to become how aware how unpresent we are. And then that starts to help facilitate. Okay. So I realized that I was distracted by my thought. Now let me see what's happening in the world around me. And this is the nature of mindfulness, and mindfulness and meditation go hand in hand because mindfulness is experiencing the present moment through our sensations. So it'll be like, oh, wow, the birds, I can hear the birds. They sound beautiful. Look at this tree. It's like I'm seeing this tree for the very first time. I'm not looking at this tree thinking about three other things. I'm really looking at this tree. And what I hope to convey is that is a really expansive experience to go to start shifting the having an awareness of the distraction and being distracted to feeling and being in the present moment, that is a big deal. And for me, it was a big deal. It was like drops of acid. It was like, holy smokes. Like, this is not that I've had acid, honestly, but it's like, whoa, the earth went from flat to round in that moment that I became present. So that's part of the journey. And then over months, so I don't know your timeline for you practicing meditation. You might be more sensitive, more consciously evolved, more have lived more lifetimes than me. I don't know. And maybe you pick it up really quickly, or maybe you already have a sense of what is the present moment. But for me, it was like, whoa, waking up like, holy smokes, here's the present moment. This is insane. And then it would be gone just like that. I would be back into thought. So the practice becomes expanding that. And interestingly enough, is like, we get tastes of that. And in yoga, that's called samadhi. And Buddhist tradition, there's a word called satori, that is like, if we go look at nature and it just wipes the slate clean and the mind goes blank, it's like, oh, that feels so amazing to experience that. So the practice becomes to start to grow those moments. And here's the funny thing is, and it's the nature of the mind, you might confront this, is that the moment we feel that and it feels really good, it becomes a desirable experience. And desire is the root of all coming out of the present moment. Desire or aversion. So either we are desiring and craving something, or we are avoiding it. So those are the two things that will take us out of the present moment. And that's where our suffering is. So meditation is the practice to create the human being that you are, that is without suffering. So it's there. It's just a matter of unearthing that and creating that for yourself, that quality of presence. Because when we eradicate, when we remove, when we transcend the aversion, the avoiding of life, and the craving and the desire in life, what do we have left? We get everything then. We get everything, because that's what really is. It's like the illusion that we live in is the aversion, and it's the craving. And so that we're living so much more in illusion than life. And the moment we start to disperse and start to take our energy away from feeding the desire and the aversion, we start to really receive all that there is in life. And that's a profound experience, because we think we're receiving, but really, for me anyway, the volume percentage on how much I received is like 5%. And I think I'm probably like 45% or something. And I can believe that there's a ceiling that I can't even see of more that I can receive from this world and become even more present. So it's one of the first, if you've made it through the process of creating the space in order to practice your meditation, in order to do your spiritual practice, if you've been lucky enough and summoned the leverage and everything that you need to make that happen, then we start to get into these moments of present moment, and it's beautiful. And wow, this is really something, and I have no idea where it's going. Then we start, here's one of the first roadblocks, is I start to desire and crave that experience. And the moment I start to desire and crave it, it goes away, because it's not a part of that. Desire and craving is not a part of that. So it's about allowing. So remember we talked last time about acceptance versus allowing. It's like the allowing of this moment, the allowing and continual allowing. Instead of craving it, it's like, I'm going to allow. And then when we do that, we really allow our attention to rest upon the present moment. When people say that the present moment is infinite, like, that's just, those are words, until we really see that, wow, I can rest in the present moment. And it seems like it's infinite. There's no boundaries to that. And that's when the dissipation of the sense of I and separateness starts to dissolve into the everything. So that happens in the present moment. So the first, Well, it's probably the 100th obstacle, really, is to start to recognize that I can further facilitate meditation and being present when I start to allow versus desire that experience. Over years, what has happened is just more time, more presence, and more authenticity. That's another thing that comes from the practice, is more being really myself, because there's so much programming that's written that I conditioned into. And what we get to do when we're sitting in that space of observing the mind is we start to allow those energies and the patterns and the conditioning to come unraveled. Because when we are in a space of doing nothing, which is the same as being, we stop initiating and continuing and deepening those patterns and conditioning. And when that happens, they start to come undone. They start to unravel. And so that's why meditation practice could be a lifetime of practice, because we can spend a whole lifetime becoming more who we are without all the programming and conditioning. What is my true nature? And that's where I am. Like, daily meditation practice, time, more time connecting with nature. This sense of presence is going to facilitate you being better at whatever it is you choose to do. Whatever it is you choose to do, doesn't matter if you're a rocket scientist or a mechanic. More presence means more being and more authenticity in what you choose to do, and that shows up. And people really see that, and people really respond to that when we are present with them. That's another thing I want to talk about, is I'm on a world record breaking rant right now.
Yeah.
How people perceive us and how we perceive people. One of the things that I noticed, so just in a nutshell, I just want to put this again, if I haven't said it five times already, the meditation practice is setting the time aside in your day at a consistent point in time and sitting down with a guide or not, and just focusing on making it through that time, and whatever happens, happens. You will become more savvy and more skillful in being an observer over time, whether you choose a meditation that is focusing on breath, or a visualization, or a body scan, or a mantra. All of these are tools. They're meditation practices. And it's that actual moment of presence that is meditation. So we put a gap between what is meditation practice and what is meditation, which is a state of being. And the meditation practice facilitates our embodying and being in a state of meditation. So that, just to be really clear about that, is important. And it's the practice, the consistency, and the giving it, I would say, commit to. I have a 30-day meditation program that I give to people to get the ball rolling. And I really hope that everyone who starts that journey finishes it. And I know the ones who have, I have a handful of people that are meditating to that program 2 years later. And it's like, wow, I'm like, okay, well, it's awesome. It's so good. And some people fizzle out the first 10 days or whatever it is. And it is what it is. But if you're able to commit to, say, 6 months, I say 6 months would be really good to just say, all right, I'm burning the bridge. I'm 6 to 6:30 AM. I'm getting myself hydrated and alert so that I can sit down and close my eyes and practice meditation, and then see what happens after 6 months. Because it's so unsexy. And that's another thing. It's such a hard sell. It's like, go here, do this thing that you feel like you're not going to get anything out of because you don't know. And then get into a fight with your own mental chatter, and it's just this exhausting process. And I know why people quit. I know it. And so I had total compassion for that, because it's not sexy. It's a hard sell.
That's funny. That's like the best quote I've ever heard about meditation. That's too funny, man.
And do that, and really some beautiful things are on the horizon. And then here's how it translates into life. And it's like we can only talk about the benefits because that's what gets people excited. But like, there's the benefit, the intangible one that I can't even talk about, that is your experience. And I really want you to have that. Really, 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 really do. And then there's the way that your life changes, because this is the nature of world. Everything we see outside of us is a mirror image of what's inside of us. All of perception, all of life is happening inside of us. When I'm presenting in a room, and let's say I'm teaching something or giving an event, sometimes I'll ask if it's around mindfulness or meditation or the mechanics of the mind. I'll say, okay, point to where you see me. And unless somebody has done that exercise before, 100% of the people who've never done that exercise will point at me. They'll put their finger and they'll point in the direction they hear my voice, and they see me. And I say, are you sure? And then I point to my eyes, where do you see me? And they start to realize that I'm seeing you inside myself. I'm seeing you inside. Like, that's where I actually see you. The light is hitting this image and it's coming in here, and everything is getting all the information that's, for all intensive purposes, I'm just information with light and vibration and frequency that's going into your system to process that information. That's what I am to you, and that's what you are to me. It's just information. And so starting to recognize that, and it's like that meditation lends itself to that quality of awareness that, wow, the life that I'm seeing and experiencing is all on me. It's all on me. And that's the leverage that we want to be able to get to take full responsibility in our life, because that's a good life. It doesn't seem like it. In the illusion and thinking that we can control things, well, in thinking that things have to happen outside of us for us to feel right inside, that's the illusion. And it's the death of that illusion when we recognize that it's all on me, that I'm creating this experience. And when that starts to happen, we can really seek out beauty and really feel and experience more beauty in our lives. And that we start to see the beauty in others. So judgment is a mental process. Judgment is the identification with the ego. It's separateness. And we recognize that judgment is just a judgment I'm creating about myself. It's not about the other. It's, if I'm judging that, then it's something in myself that I'm finding fault with. It's very interesting. It's metaphysical. And what happens when we step away from judgment? Well, life becomes more open and more possible and more curious. And we start to re-inhabit that same childlike wonder of wanting to explore and learn and greet everyone with an open heart that we had when we were a child. And that's one of the most beautiful things. And people respond to that. A human being who is present can shatter any wall that somebody puts up, because all the wall is there for in another individual is to protect them from everything that isn't present. Is that really how I want to say it? I'm trying to find my words on that.
Yeah.
This is the reason gurus, mystics, very profound spiritual teachers that have that sense of presence attract so many people, just because of their presence, and because they're really seeing others. It's a vibration. Mm. Presence is a vibration. And if you are greet somebody fully present and fully in allowance, whatever wall or barrier they have up is just, it feels, it's free to go. It can stay or it can go, but it's free. It knows, and it knows that, and that person can sense that, that they don't have to be anything other than who they are in your presence, because there is no judgment there.
Yeah.
And what a powerful gift to give to those, for yourself, first and foremost, to be in that body that feels that way. And then for those around you, the ones you love, and here's the compassion piece, is when we start to become more aware. I certainly became more aware of how judgmental I can be, and how micro judgments and all of these things, and just the needing things to be different, et cetera. And it requires a cultivation of compassion to say, well, that's where I am, and that happened. Let me be present right now. Let me, like, right now, always now is a great time to be present. So it spills over into all, it is our life. It is our life. It's not even spilling over, but it's influencing all aspects of our life if we get more present. And that is the fruit of meditation practice.
Awesome. Love it. I love it. That stuff at the end is tremendous. Like, we were talking about, the inner judgments and that sort of thing. And just replacing it with compassion. And, because we were kind of talking about it at the beginning of the, before we went on the air here, just about the, what awareness can do. Awareness, as soon as you're aware of, a habit that you'd like to change, or a pattern that you've been running that you've never truly questioned, there's like the old quote is like life's not worth, like an unaware life is not worth living, something along those lines, right? Where you're just constantly, you're not questioning these learned behaviors and the background and all that. So that's the awareness that you get from meditation, or the present moment, is then what dissolves it. And I like how I've never heard it worded as such, but inner compassion removes inner judgment, right? There's no need for the mm-hmm. judgment anymore, because it's like you said, it's acceptance. It's remove it. It's go, that's where I am right now. And that's fine. Right. It's those, like, what it always reminds me of, the ultimate like movie moment of acceptance that got me emotional. It's still, whenever I watch it, is you've seen the movie Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind. Are you familiar with that movie?
Oh yeah. It's been ages, but that movie, I would want to see it again, because I've forgotten, but last time I saw it was very touching.
Oh, very, very much so. So the spot I'm speaking of, and it personifies this in a film sense, is at the very end, when Jim Carrey and Kate Winslet reconcile after they've all gone through their whole journey that they had. And she comes up to him, and she's like, I'm still going to be overbearing, and I'm still going to be, this, and this. And he just goes, that's okay. And like, man, I get like emotionally even talking about it. Like, it's like, I just, that really resonated with me. Like, that to me is like the ultimate. And it's in like the context of a relationship, where it's just like, I still have all this and all this. And you're just like, that's okay. Like, and just to say that, the level of acceptance and, is just like so profound. So I thought that was just a beautiful part. And that's kind of what I came to my mind when you were sort of talking about that inner compassion that just dissolves, literally just removes inner judgment.
It was so good,
so just fascinating. So yes, and Jeff, that might have been your record so far as just stream of consciousness talking. So fantastic work, excellent stuff. I covered a lot of different things. I love how you interweave personal experience with, some of the theories, and then it contextualizes it. Nothing better than passing on information than putting a story attached to it and an experience attached to it. So you do that so wonderfully well. And I think honestly, you weaved in a lot of just the myths or the misconceptions, or I guess mistakes, or hangups that people have with meditation. You went through the same, and basically the micro steps that you can do to get through to the stage where it's kind of the start and then keep going. Just, it's simple, right?
It always comes down to keep going.
So excellent stuff. I love the idea as well that you yourself also started with, with guided meditation too, right? It's like somebody that's farther along the way, and actually to the point that you're helping people with their meditations, it's easy to lose sight of, for a person like me or a listener, that you were once at that stage, and that was sort of the linchpin for you, is like using Headspace, which is a fantastic app. So getting to that stage where you know, there's a degree of help. It's almost the training wheels. And then, you know, eventually you can either keep doing that or, you know, there is different ways, right? So you can do that. There's body scans. We can get it. You got a little bit into that. There's like the body scans. There's the, just the allowance, like just, I kind of call it like the, we talked about it before on a podcast, actually, like the river analogy where like the thoughts are like leaves and you let the leaves just go by. You see them, you witness them, and they're going by, they're and going. You're just, it's all good, right? So
clouds in the sky.
Yeah. Yes. Clouds in the sky, traffic going by, whatever analogy you want to use, visual. So that's great. Aside from that, like you do, I want to give, you know, the listeners an opportunity to check on your website. You have this, this quiz. Basically, it kind of it goes through, I think, about 8 different questions. And then from there, you get an email package from you. And that's how you can get into your 30-day meditation challenge. And yeah, can you let us know a little bit about that? Because I think it's a fantastic idea that you have.
I've ever since realizing that I, you know, wanted to teach and wanted to share the practice of meditation, I've been trying to figure out ways that, you know, how can I connect people with this? Because there is that barrier of getting started and feeling okay where we are and everything like that. So there's been a handful of ways that I've tried to make it interesting and useful and knowledgeable, like a learning experience. There's so many meditation techniques. There's so many different practices. All of these with the intention to get us to that state, to that experience, so that we can really know ourselves. And the practices, they suit some personalities and some people better than others. So I have lots of students that come and say, you know, your body scan meditations are just, it's just not working for me. Mm. I really love the breath. Mm. I really love the breath. I have some people say the visualization just, I get stuck or I can't visualize it. I really love, you know, something else. And so it's a person. I made that quiz with the intention. It's what would be the personality traits and what would be the characteristics of somebody who would tend to like, a walking meditation, or a meditation with a single pointed focus, or a mantra meditation. And in no sense is that quiz comprehensive or the final answer, but what it is there for is to say, here, try this and be curious. And then get in it, and then it's a gateway into a meditation practice. So there are a handful of more prevalent meditation practices. For me, the most valuable, the one I find most accessible personally and for 90% of the people I work with, whether it's in yoga teacher training or personal or part of the meditation community I've got is the breath. Mm. And the breath, and we just spent a whole hour talking about the breath last time, but the breath is this thing that when I say that the present moment is infinite and we're experiencing the breath in the present moment, there is always something to explore. And it's like a ever evolving experience to be present with the breath. And so I love that has so much room for possibility. And like I said, when I started this journey, it's like, what? I don't understand the point. Like, here's my breath. Okay. And then to just over the years, over the months and years, to become more sensitive, more attenuated to the subtle. That's another thing. There's infinitely billions of trillions of things happening that we're just not even aware of because it's not in our field of attention right now. So to become able to tune into the subtle and start to see the subtle experience, to start to understand how things move at the subtle, is really how we do a lot of profound healing and moving mountains in our life in terms of what we're here to do in life. And I started the conversation by talking a lot about the the journey I had with eating and my dysfunctional relationship with food, dysfunctional relationship with body image and exercise. And it was the meditation that is meditation, yoga, spiritual practices that have helped me really come to a fine and comfortable place with my body, with how I eat, with how I take care of myself. And so there's the, imagine all the energy that I was wasting being, that inner chaos and the inner suffering and the trying it and hoping to it to be different and trying to mentally and logistically try and fix the problems. Like if I can just have the perfect meal plan in my day or just, or the perfect structure for this exercise happens and then I eat this and then I'll be super shredded and everything like that. Like if I just let all, like imagine all the energy that goes into that. All the energy and willpower gets to come back into me. And now I have a fluid and a healthy relationship with all those things. So those are just there. They're fine. They're great. And I get to put that energy into creating, into working, into enjoying more of life. Like what a, that's a gift that nobody can pay for. Like there's no amount of money that can pay for that. And so in saying that is, whatever can get us started in meditation, I find is really, really important. And if it's guided meditation, great. But it's like, I always want to be very clear about it's, there's obstacles to it. We are the obstacle essentially, but like there's a lot of discomfort and uncertainty that gets traversed in the process of sitting with oneself. But the spiritual texts and the spiritual philosophies have these, really appropriate imagery and analogy of this is the burning away. It's how fire transforms. It's like when we sit in meditation, it's being in the fire and it's burning away all that is not real. And it's like, we start to realize, well, the whole hang up I have with food and with body image, it's not real. I don't have to give it my energy. So it's reclaiming that. I forgot where I got was tailing off on that, but you know, the meditation quiz is there as a gateway drug for more meditation. And and I really want to, I just always want to give people permission to, you know, have their doubts, have the challenges and everything, because that's so part of it. It's like if I say that you're, and I did, I was that kind of teacher when I was more naive and more ignorant. It was like trying to force a certain practice on somebody and say that, well, you should, I shoulded them. You should be able to do it and you should get these benefits. But I've learned a lot, and through my own journey, just a lot more of, okay, how can I give the fruit and the, or how can I give the tools to do the practice and as loving and as support, like inspiring and empowering way I possibly can, so that they can take, because nobody's going to be able to drink the water unless they drink. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. So that's where I stand with it. And I love that you found the quiz and that hopefully it was enriching.
It was very enjoyable. So as always, we have put, you know, everything, all your links in the show notes, but definitely check out the website, jeffalivin.com, I believe. And yeah, you will find the quiz there. Highly recommend it. I know a lot of folks, we are still, you know, we're getting into mid-February time of recording here, but there is still a lot of people that are, you know, reassessing, you know, New Year's resolutions. And, you know, sometimes it sort of trickles into the first, all of a sudden, it's like the first quarter of the year, you're kind of recalibrating and figuring out. And sometimes, you know, spring is like, is the rebirth time for a lot of people. And they go, okay, well, it didn't really... I didn't really get things on track in January, February, but spring is just that extra energy and, you know, what better time to get out into nature and things of that, you know, in that sense. So, you know, it's always, you can, I heard from, yeah, what our, one of our mentors, Mark England, he says the best time to plant an apple tree was 15 years ago. And the second best time is today. So, you know, there's always a time to start this. So thank you so much, Jeff. Fantastic stuff as always. And man, we're coming up on episode 8. I have some special plans for episode 8. I may as well just come up with them now. So I'm just starting to get into like the video podcasting as well. So I was wondering if you would be wanting to be one of my first guests for that. And I was thinking, yeah, maybe a little bit of a presentation thing. So if you wanted to bring any literature or slides or anything, totally your call. If you want to do anything along those lines, as far as, and then, just kind of bring it all together as far as a sort of a presentation, as far as, some of the packages that you offer and that sort of thing. Cause I think everybody's got a very good deep dive as far as what you bring to the table, the kind of, leadership that you provide. And so basically kind of have it in a nice, contained, package at the end and just, give the visual to everybody as well. I'll give you an opportunity to do a little bit of a presentation on yourself and just the Jeff A. Living lifestyle.
You got it.
Awesome.
I'm up for that.
Oh, I love it. Awesome.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you. And just so you know, I just had this idea actually come to me while we were doing that. I'm like, how are we going to put this 10 hours of content together? And what I'm going to do is I think I'm going to create a whole separate website that just where this mini series can live, just downloadable episodes. So you have this, the 8 episodes that you can listen to or download. And it's just sort of a destination spot independent of, my website, as far as with the podcast itself. And then it just has its own little, it's an island unto itself as a resource for folks and that sort of thing. So if you're cool with that, I will be approaching that as well.
Awesome.
Awesome, man.
100%.
Beautiful. Thank you, so Jeff. Cool. As always, you turn my spirits around, and you're definitely a coach, mentor, and a very good friend of mine. And thank you for all the excellent content you create for all the listeners here at Electric Soil Podcast.
So grateful. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you, Matt, for holding it together, man.